Welcome to the Sam Knows podcast. I'm Barry Collins. Few things are more infuriating than your broadband connection going down, especially these days when it's your professional as well as your personal life that's likely to suffer. Broadband providers obviously want to deal with problems before their customers even notice them, but that's not always easy. When you're serving millions of homes and businesses with various types of connection, a huge range of routers, and different versions of software on those routers, nailing down the cause of a problem is rarely simple. That's why Sam Crawford and his team at Sam Knows devised FaultFinder, a product that combines the enormous amount of real-time data Sam Knows collects from broadband lines with metadata provided by the ISPs themselves to help precisely identify the cause and scale of a fault, sometimes within seconds. In this month's podcast, Sam tells me about how FaultFinder was developed, how it works, and what he plans to add to the product in the future. I started by asking Sam how long he'd been working on the FaultFinder concept.
Working on, not very long, maybe a year or so now, maybe a little bit longer, but thinking about it, many years prior to that, or well, at least 4 or 5 years prior to that, we already have a lot of measurement data, so billions and billions of rows of measurement data arrive every day into our platform, and often it's like finding a needle in a haystack looking for an issue. Well, you don't even know if there's zero needles in the haystack or a million needles. Mm-hmm. But when you're running so many measurements across such large networks, there's bound to be a bunch of needles at any one time in the haystack. And we've had lots of issues over the years, or we've helped customers to identify lots of issues, but it's been quite a manual, painstaking process for the customers to find it. I've always thought that it would be nice to automate it somehow. So, because we already have all of the ingredients, it's just a case of putting the data that we already have to better use, and automating the analysis of this to discover anomalies. So that's an idea that's been simmering in the back of my mind for many years.
And it was lockdown that finally gave you the opportunity to put it to work.
Yes, not just lockdown, to be fair. Yes, lockdown certainly gave me an opportunity to explore some stuff technically, because we weren't traveling so much, or well, at all. And everyone kind of tightened their belts a little bit. So there was, particularly in the early days of the lockdown, there's a lot of uncertainty. And we were all working from home, so we had less traveling into the office too. So yeah, I had a lot of time to experiment with new things. I'd say the other thing which gave us the opportunity to work on this was something that I think we might have talked about on the podcast previously, or certainly in blog posts, which is our move to a new data pipeline around 2 years or so ago, which rather than using batch-based processing, uses real-time streaming of measurement data. Mm-hmm. And really, it's the real-time aspect that makes FaultFinder possible. We need a real-time stream of data to work from.
So tell us how FaultFinder works and what it actually does.
So as you know, we have all of these measurement agents around the world, a couple of 100,000 white boxes, our own hardware measurement probes, we have a far, far larger number of our router agents running inside CPE provided by ISP. So we have tens of millions of those. And all of these are running scheduled measurements. The vast majority of them are running scheduled measurements. So this means we might run a download test once an hour or once every few hours, a latency test once an hour. And that predictability is important, and we'll come back to that in a minute. So we have all of this measurement data arriving into our data pipeline. And at the moment, or historically, what we've done is we've taken that measurement data, we've dropped it straight into our big data store, which is BigQuery, provided by Google's cloud hosting platform, and then we've made it available in our in SAMnose One. And most of our customers will look at that in the analytics part of SAMnose One, and they'll look across, they'll look across their network at the various metrics and look for, they might have a network operations team which is looking for changes, so drops in performance, drops in number of devices online, things like this. But it's all quite, it's all been quite manual historically. And we've been to some of the network operation centers that some of the ISPs run, and they're quite impressive things. They look like a NASA-style control room, which is quite cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're just one of the systems up on the wall, but there's many others. And Fault Finder basically automates the process of looking for anomalies in the measurement data. So we have this constant stream of incoming measurement data, and importantly, metadata, which I'll talk about in a minute. We have this constant stream of incoming measurement data, and the predictability of it allows us to build a model or build trends of what is expected performance based upon the historical average and the expected volumes, because we know what the expected volumes should be because they're scheduled measurements. And again, we have the historical volumes to act as our trend line. Mm-hmm. And then we are basically comparing the current set of measurements, or the current working set of measurements, which is across a sliding window, against our historical trends. Now, this sounds quite simple, quite basic, but we're doing this across not just like one or two dimensions, like what is the historical download speed, what is the current versus historical download speed for, I don't know, Comcast as an example. Mm-hmm. We're doing this across tens or hundreds of thousands of different dimensions. And this is where the metadata comes into play. So we're not just looking at download speed, as an example. We're looking at all of our metrics. And remember, we have dozens and dozens of metrics. Obviously, download speed is one of them. But there's upload speed, you know, latency, loss, all of the gaming measurements, video conferencing, so on. We're doing it for all of the metrics. And we're not just doing it for the for the metric values themselves, like download speed. We're also looking at the sample count, so the number of measurements we receive, because if there's a big drop in measurement sample size, then that's an indicator that something else has gone wrong. Mm-hmm. So maybe a whole bunch of devices have gone offline due to maybe a power cut or a problem in a part of an operator's network or a flood. I don't know. It could be or configuration issue, like we talked about with the resilience episode a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah.
And then there is a much larger set of dimensions that multiplies out everything I've talked about, which is metadata. Now, when we say metadata, we mean information about the white boxes or CPE. So that might be, you know, we know by working with the ISP, they might tell us that CPE number 12345 is on an ARIS CMTS with this firmware version on this line card in Atlanta. I don't know. There's lots more dimensions, right? Like some of the ISPs will give us about 30 or 40 different metadata fields. So from everything from the head end side of the equation to the client side of the equation. So the CPE model number and firmware version, things like that. So things that we can't necessarily know ourselves, things which the operator has to tell us. So by combining the metric data, the measurements that we collect with the metadata that's provided by the operator, we can track down really, really, really specific things. Mm-hmm. With really high granularity and with really high certainty. So, for example, let's say an operator deploys, and this is a real example, let's say an operator deploys a new firmware across their CPE fleet, and this firmware has a very subtle bug which causes the wired throughput to slow down to 10 megabits per second. So regardless of what access speed, regardless whether you're on a 100 megabit product, 1 gigabit product, or 5 megabit product, doesn't matter, it will cause your internet access speed to slow down to 10 megabits per second. Mm-hmm. If you're just looking at this in a traditional analytics system, you're going to see a slow trend downwards from the previous average speed as this firmware is slowly deployed across the user base. And then you're going to have to go through all of the various groupings and filtering options in your analytics platform, whether it's SAMnose or whether it's something else, doesn't matter. And you're going to have to say, you have to try and find, like, what is the factor which is causing this drop? Maybe you as an engineer, maybe you already know that there was a firmware rollout that just started on, you know, last Wednesday, or maybe you don't. Because in large organizations, these things happen one part of the organization doesn't necessarily know what the other part is doing.
Yeah.
But Fall Finder will be able to say, I've seen a drop in download speeds, and it is actually correlated very, very highly with a change in this particular piece of metadata. So I can see the firmware version was previously 1, it's now 2, and that has a 90% correlation with the drop in download speeds. So then an anomaly is raised by Fault Finder, which says there's been a 95% drop in download speeds, and we think it has a high impact, and we think it's caused by the switch from firmware version 1 to firmware version 2. Of course, Fault Finder has no understanding of what it means from a firmware version change. It doesn't understand firmwares. You could give it a piece of metadata, which is like, you know, what color is the customer's front door, and it will try to do the correlation with that. But it's basically finding that needle in the haystack for you.
And so the key here is that it's not just saying you've got a problem, it's saying you've got a problem and we think this is the cause.
Yes. Bear in mind, it can only be as good as the input data. So we can be very sure about the measurement data because we're collecting that ourselves. If the metadata we're given is incomplete, so let's say the ISP doesn't give us the key factor which is actually causing the problem, then we will correlate it, and we might correlate it to something else. Like in that particular instance, if they don't give us the firmware version, maybe they just give us the CPU model. We'll correlate it to the CPU model, which had the firmware update, but maybe we'll give it a much lower probability score because, you know, only half the CPU have had that rollout, but it's still the highest probability, or it's still the highest impact element out of all of the various metadata.
And so working out where an outlier or an anomaly occurs must be quite difficult and different, I presume, between every ISP and every metric, because you can't just set like a 10% band, presumably, and describe it as an anomaly across the board.
No, absolutely, yeah. And this is one of the key concerns. I've worked in a network operations center early in my career. I worked a little bank called Lehman Brothers, and I worked in a network operations center for a year or so on my industrial placement year from university. So I know what a network operations center is like, and I know what it's like to have fixed set thresholds on things. I mean, sometimes for some things it is reasonable to have a fixed set of thresholds, but certainly, and when I mean fixed thresholds, what I'm saying is, like, let's say your normal latency to google.com is 5 milliseconds. You might set a fixed set of thresholds to say anything more than 8 milliseconds, I'm going to generate an alert. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fine if you're operating over a leased line and you've got dedicated connectivity to Google, and you know that anything more than that is probably really a problem. But that doesn't work so well in the internet, because, you know, my internet connection at home might have 18 milliseconds to Google, but 5 miles down the road, it might be 20 milliseconds to Google because of A, the extra distance, and B, different paths through the operator's network. And another user might have 1 millisecond to Google. It can be, there's no good fixed set of bounds which work really well on the internet. And much more importantly, some of these factors change by time of day. Uh-huh. So some operators will have, quite reasonably, have some congestion during peak hours. So you will see, I don't know, throughput drops slightly during peak hours, latency increase slightly during peak hours, packet loss increase slightly during peak hours. So you don't want to come up with a fixed set of thresholds which have to encompass all of the peaks and drops and so on, because you're going to be missing stuff, and you're going to be missing some parts of the day, and you'll be too sensitive in other parts. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all this is a long way of saying that Fault Finder doesn't use fixed thresholds at all. It learns based upon historical trends for what is normal for the network, and then basically applies a standard deviation multiplier across those previous trends to work out what is an acceptable tolerance. So, as an example, if your ISP, let's say we're modeling a trend for download speed in Luton, mm-hmm. Let's say off-peak hours, the average is, let's say, somewhere between 90 and 100 megabits. And on-peak, let's say this ISP has a known congestion problem and it's dropping down to 50 megabits, but they're okay with that. For whatever reason, the ISP is tolerant of that. Mm-hmm. Fault Finder will learn that pattern. So it will say, right, 90 to 100 megabits, off-peak hours, whatever the standard deviation of that is, that means it's going to calculate a set of acceptable bounds around that mean. So it might say, I don't know, let's say 80 to 120 megabits per second will be acceptable off peak. And then during peak, it might accept, let's say 40 to 60 megabits or 30 to 70. And if speeds are more, not only lower, but also more volatile during peak hours, then it will learn that volatility is normal as well. And it will increase the thresholds accordingly.
You touched on this earlier when you talked about the real-time data, but what are some of the unique things about Fault Finder? What does it do that none of your rivals can offer?
So the real-time is important to us, and we know that we know from our work on the data pipeline a couple of years ago that some of our customers really, really, really value having the measurement data arriving in real-time, particularly the people who are relying on it for network operations. Strangely enough, I was talking with somebody who worked at another company who does some measurements recently, and we were talking about data pipelines as we do. Mm-hmm. And they said they don't have a real-time data pipeline. They have a 24-hour batch delayed mechanism for loading all of their data, which basically would make, and they said that's fine for their use case, for their customers' use case. They don't really have any strong demand for real-time data, but what they're also means is it's impossible for them to do something like Fault Finder without a 24-hour delay. Mm-hmm. Who wants to be told about a major issue that's occurring across your customer base 24 hours late? The whole idea of something like Fault Finder is to know about it before your customers know about it so that you can rectify it. So the real-time data allows us to identify faults very quickly. And we'll touch on this later, but we're working to bring that down even lower. With the volume of measurements that we have coming in, we can identify some kinds of faults far, far more quickly than others. I mean, potentially down to a minute or so, or maybe even into the seconds area in the future. So if you just think about it, if we've got, I don't know, let's say we've got 6 million agents on one ISP reporting us measurements. Mm-hmm. That's even if they're only running a test once every, let's say they're running a latency test once every couple of hours, something like this. Because we've just have so many agents out there, it doesn't matter that they're only running once every couple of hours. It means we've got a lot of measurements arriving every second. So we can spot a lack of measurements very, very quickly. So we can't necessarily spot a rise in latency, but we can certainly spot outages very, very quickly. So that's really, really important. Having the real-time data enables us to do that. If we were operating a batch processing process, then we couldn't do that. The other thing that sets us apart is the metadata that I talked about earlier. We have such a well-established feed of metadata from some of the larger ISPs we work with that we can get really, really, really granular. And don't get me wrong, we don't have that for all of the ISPs we work with. For some of the smaller ones, it can be a bit onerous on them to set up a metadata feed. But that's something we're working with them to simplify. But yeah, it's the key thing for me with Fault Finder is that we already have all of the building blocks. We already have the real-time data, we already have the scheduled measurements, and we already have the metadata feed arriving to us. So we just needed to put those pieces together, plug it into an anomaly detection engine that we wrote in-house, and we have the data. We have the anomalies. It doesn't need our ISP customers or to do anything new or different. We already had all of the pieces to do this. So we're making more out of what we already had. And that's a very, very attractive thing for both us and the customers.
You touched there about writing the software in-house. Just for the techies in the audience, give us a bit more about how Fault Finder is coded and what language you use and whatever.
Sure. It's actually written in Java because that's probably what I have the most experience in for this kind of project, and also the Kafka. So we're using Kafka as our real-time event streaming system, and the Kafka libraries for Java are very, very good. Mm-hmm. So we're making use of Java with Kafka for the streaming layer. We're using Spring Boot as a framework within Java to basically make some of the instrumentation much easier. And obviously, we're running all this inside Docker containers to separate it out into individual microservices. And yes, that's pretty much it.
And it's all coded in-house. You're not taking any off-the-shelf sort of elements.
We're using open source libraries where it makes sense to use open source libraries like Spring Boot. And we're certainly making use of some well-published techniques for estimating sample sizes or volumes with very low memory overheads. Mm-hmm. So for example, as I mentioned earlier, we have billions and billions of measurements arriving every single day. We can't store all of that measurement data in memory in any application, and then try to perform analysis on it in real time. It doesn't. The memory storage requirements would be very, very large. Mm-hmm. So instead, what you tend to do is you use estimates. Now, these estimates, it might sound a bad thing, but when you're using estimates across very, very large data sets, you can do that very efficiently with very little error. It's the same thing which people like Google and Facebook use for their advertising impressions estimates. So one example algorithm that we make use of extensively inside Fault Finder is Hyperlog-Log, which is an algorithm for estimating frequency distribution.
And just finally, Sam, what else are you looking to add to Fault Finder in the future?
Well, lots of things. So as examples, a couple of examples would be one I mentioned earlier, getting the detection time for anomalies down even further. So bringing it, we think we can get it down to sub 1 minute for higher impact or the more obvious anomalies. Currently, mm-hmm. we wait a bit longer to have certainty, but that's simply because we don't want to generate false positives until we're, we don't want to generate false positives at all, right? But mm-hmm. we want to have certainty before we generate an anomaly. But I think we can bring that down quite a bit still. And secondly, in the future, it would be nice to incorporate some machine learning into this as well. So far, frankly, we haven't needed to, but in the future, it would be nice to add in a feedback loop. So we can take into account user feedback from anomalies. So for example, if we generate an anomaly and the user says, actually, this was a real anomaly and it was a really high impact anomaly, we can take that feedback, incorporate it into our future models, and then increase our sensitivity to try and catch those kinds of anomalies sooner in the future.
That's it from this month's episode of the Sam Knows podcast. Make sure to read the full article on samknows.com, and we'll be back next month. Goodbye.